Welcome. Jump into the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast, where leading with love isn't just nice, it's genius. I'm Laurel Donnellan.
And I'm Daryl Brown. We'll unpack business strategies infused with empathy and action, driving both profit and purpose. Our world is ever-changing, so discover how the savvy leader wears compassion as their power suit.
I am so excited about today's podcast because I get to be with Jill Feliciano, who is the Global Vice President of DEIB at HighSpot. HighSpot's based in Seattle, Washington, but Jill is speaking to us from Chicago today, where she's located. HighSpot is a sales enablement platform that drives productivity. Jill has championed policy changes for LGBTQ and women's inclusion, secured pay transparency, and advocates for underrepresented groups. She leads 7 employee resource groups and the inclusion of Belonging Council and empowers employees to shape an equitable workplace. She tackles complex conversations, ensuring all voices are heard, even from dominant groups who feel excluded from workplace inclusion initiatives. Currently, Jill is at the forefront of discussions about the impact of AI on the workplace, and she is one of our 2024 CLC Award honorees. Welcome, Jill.
Oh, boy. Well, thank you so much for that wonderful introduction. I am thrilled to be here and looking forward to this discussion.
So there's so many things we could talk about. What's on my mind and heart today is in the face of our recent election, no matter what your party or who you voted for, what your political views are, as an advocate for compassionate leadership, I am concerned about the new administration not necessarily being a beacon of compassion always. And I am worried about how those of us that care about compassion and empathy can continue to be hopeful and continue to shine a light on the good. So lots of things we can talk about, Jill, but how are you feeling about the election and your work at the moment?
Yeah, Laurel, I have to be honest. You know, I think for me, there are so many mixed emotions. And I think it's because we've never seen a U.S. presidential election play out on a stage amplified by the media, social media. So I think we've all experienced it in very different ways, but it feels very different. I have observed that conversations around politics have now spilled into the workplace in levels that they haven't before. I'm observing that different generations are more engaged in this conversation. And I don't know about you, but when I was in elementary school, high school, maybe college, you know, like this wasn't the first topic that I was talking to with my friends, but my kids are having conversations about it. So I just, you know, have to mention that it feels different. But, you know, I do have to say that as someone who prides themselves on being a compassionate leader, I want to maintain this hopefulness that compassion and empathy will enter rooms of people who have titles that carry influence and power and even privilege, right? To think about more than just themselves, right? Others when they're making decisions. I am focusing on being practical, so I'm trying not to get ahead of myself, open and real. So I am waiting, right, to see, you know, who's placed in what seat and what some of those policy strategies and reorganization of the government may look like. And then obviously, you know, there is concern and detail to attention as to how those policies may reshape or challenge the DEI landscape as we know it today, not only across government, higher ed, but obviously in the corporate sector as well.
Well, I grew up in a very political family, so I was like campaigning for McGovern when I was in 8th grade. So it was a little bit of a different type of family. And it really kind of stemmed from my great grandmother and grandmother who suffragettes and fought for the vote in the 19 teens, and 20s in Chicago, of all places. But I, like you, I am remaining hopeful and remaining strong and remaining connected to other people that care about compassion and empathy. And I also understand that in, our platforms, you as a leader in a company and my platform, we have an opportunity to continue to shine a bright light on people like you that are doing good work in the organization. And I have talked to lots of clients where, it's interesting that I have someone here today who is in charge of DEIMB, which is something that I am so passionate about and continue to learn about. But part of the landscape now is political diversity, right? And how can we have those conversations, whether it's at a coffee bar, at church, at work? Because I think that's the path forward to unity is, respectful conversations with each other when we're different. So it kind of blends into your work, I'm sure.
Yeah, respectful disagreement is kind of what we're calling it these days. But, if we actually take a step back, right? And, it's this misinformation of what DEI is. Like, I believe that's where all of this is stemming from, right? Where you have, some people who see DEI as this counter threat to taking away from or giving certain groups advantages over others, right? That is where a lot of, I think, the disconnectedness of what the spirit of DEI is, right? Whereas if you look at history, especially in the US, and you understand the experiences of different groups, especially historically marginalized groups, like there were laws and infrastructure put into place to segregate and withhold healthcare, education, I mean, property, everything, right? So we can't pretend, right, like that part of our history didn't exist and has created an uneven leveling playing field for some, right? So DEI speaks to two things. It speaks to creating an environment where every aspect of diversity can be embraced. That means diversity of those in dominant groups too, right? That's the piece that I don't believe is often talked about.
I think you're so right. And even in your bio, we mentioned that you help people feel included that aren't from underrepresented groups. Can you talk about that? Because I think that's being missed. That message is being missed, and it's so important.
Yeah, well, I would say in some of those dominant communities, they're has been a rumor that spreads around the misinformation of DEI, right? So it is weaponized and seen as something to hurt or take away or disenfranchise that community, right? So often when I speak to, especially men in dominant groups, they lean in with the perspective that like this work doesn't include them. Like they will say things like, well, I'm not a woman, so like, can I? Or I know this doesn't pertain to me, but right, like those are the statements that I often get. And I say, no, before we go further, this work is about you too. By the way, I don't know if folks know, but over 96% of the workforce will become disabled at some point in time. The fact that we're aging and need different accommodations is going to be a benefit, right? The fact that, dominant groups also are caretakers and parents, that also is a benefit to them. The policies and the programs are offered to everybody, but it's helping create the story and the connection for those in dominant groups to understand that they do belong. And at least for my leaders at Highspot, they know that I'm pulling up a chair right next to me and I'm like, you're sitting here. Because you are an equal stakeholder in this work, and let me help you find your lane and your connection, and then let me empower you to own it, drive it, and also help others that need different things to equally be successful in the workplace.
So, can you tell us specifically about what you've done at Highspot with that? Because I think that's a huge opportunity at all organizations to, I guess you could start anywhere in the organization with DEIB, but I'm curious about how you got all your leaders on board and on the same train.
Well, I think there are a couple things, right? Like I have to admit that I work for an amazing CEO who is committed to culture and doing the right thing, right? That is something that is naturally built into his DNA, and I don't want to take credit for that. But what he has been open about and excited that I'm there is to really help shape how you bring that to life and the infrastructure and the DNA of a company's operations, right? So I do have to say thank you to our CEO for that. But in addition to that, we actually start with his direct reports on the lessons around inclusion, right? DEIB is a formula. And the question is, what letter do you start with? Like, and for me, you should always start with inclusion because I think we all agree that inclusion is the core reason why we feel belonging in the workplace, no matter who you are, your groups, et cetera, et cetera. If we actually can create a workplace where we're respectful, we can listen to one another, understand our working styles, what policies and benefits we need, we can create a workplace where we just feel like we belong because all the stuff is here for us to thrive, right? And that doesn't mean we have to be of certain groups in class. It's just to have that inclusive feeling, right? That's where we start. Inclusion is a means to psychological safety. Once we've established inclusion and psychological safety, we can talk about what it is we need. Then that helps us drive into equity. What do you need, Laurel, that's different than Jill? Well, I'm neurodivergent, right? So I need a screen reader sometimes, or I need ChatGPT, right, to summarize things quickly for me, where you may not need that, right? But it's there, right? Because they know it's my need, but you can also benefit from it if you just want to use it to gain process optimization. Okay, that's equity. Now we're figuring out what people need. Now we can figure out what people need. Then we then open the door to diversity because different people from different backgrounds now can see themselves being successful in the workplace and they're attracted to that, right? So yes, you want to recruit and have diverse candidate slates and all those things is very important because we know how diverse teams perform at higher rates. Like we know the case study, right? But that workplace setup allows diversity to come in and it allows them to stay. So we benefit from the innovation and thought leadership, right? So that is the experience that I've brought my leaders through to help them understand from a personal connection what inclusion is, why it's important, how do you create it, not to be afraid of it and its benefits, and then opening that door to welcoming differences into their team and differences actually staying, right? And driving that value. In that for again, I call it a formula. In the formula, belonging is the decision that an individual makes, right? So inclusion is the workplace, equity are the tools that we each need that may be different. Diversity is our differences. Once we get a survey of those things, we then say to ourselves, I belong here.
So it's really driven by
It's an outcome.
the team member, and only they could decide.
It's an outcome. And belonging is the measurement that we use as a part of our engagement surveys. And that helps us understand if some of those things that we're doing, right, in the I and the E are actually driving people to feel like they have what they need, they are contributing, and they actually belong.
So I, of course, am biased because I think all of these things are amazing, and the way you laid it out is genius. But I've been hearing a lot, especially during the political campaign when Kamala got into the running, when people would say like she's a DEIB hire, I would like it would give me like heart palpitations. Do you think we need to change the like I feel like it's the DEIB has been co-opted by people that want to criticize it instead of embrace it. So I'm wondering if we need new branding or a new term, or do we just fight for
That's a really good question, right? And like that is the conversation that I'm having with chief diversity officers across different industries, right? And I think it depends. It depends, right? We have some companies that are so far on their DEI journey that their employees understand it. They know exactly what it means, how it shows up, and how it's a benefit, right? And it's adopted, right? So they're at a very different place. However, you'll have companies who maybe don't have strong support. Maybe DEI is a new thing. It's a post-George Floyd initiative that's only been there for a couple of years. So it's starting to get some stickiness, but not quite yet. Well, in that case, and if there is resistance, you may want to reevaluate how you speak to it and how you bring your company along for the journey. But Laura, let me be honest. I've been doing this for over 15 years, and like this moment isn't new to practitioners.
Right.
This right? This moment will pass, just being honest. But I think what's important is for me, I don't care what you call it. You can call me the ice cream department. As long as that, the policies we roll out for employees are fair, equitable, and obtainable, as long as we're being fair in the way that we pay, right, and compensate and reward, that we have rules and guidelines in place for how we promote and how we grow and we learn so everyone can be successful. As long as the essence of the work is there, I'm actually not married to the name.
I think your point about the length of the programs and whether it's really baked into your culture, like my alma mater at the College of Business at Cornell, we've had diversity, equity, inclusion area and leadership, I think, for 30 years. So, it also takes a long time to make things work and change, especially I feel like the older the institution, the longer it takes to get these things going. I also my podcast partner Daryl Brown, who's taught me a lot about this, and I've walked with him down this journey. He's been working, I think, at Fordham for 15 years, similar to you, as a board of trustee, as an advocate for diversity. He's diversified their board. He and others have diversified their board, diversified their staff. They now have a woman president. And now they're working on diversifying the student body. So, but it's a beautiful and patient, and it's a long game you're playing, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely, right? This isn't a new process change. It is a movement of both the head and the heart. And I mean, just think about what we need to go through to change the way we think, right? Like we all have to go through personal therapy, right? So to imagine, to bring all employees along that journey who are at very different points in their career, their perspective, their life stage, and their understanding and acceptance of DEI. So it's something that does not happen overnight. It's this continuous effort. But what I can say, Laurel, is that I would encourage companies to focus on what I call the stickiness of DEI. The stickiness is if you can successfully embed it into your operating model without calling it DEI, it will be just natural to how the company works,
It
right?
could be called smart business.
Or ice cream. I don't care. But right, so business integration, which is a very unique skill. And one thing that I am thankful for is before I moved into DEI, I was an operational engineer. So being able to break down the processes and measure it with data and understand, who's benefiting most or not at different rates and right-sizing the process, not to let people get ahead, but to make sure it is equitable and accessible by all is going to be key. And I think that stickiness factor is what people need to double down on now. So I think that's the first thing. The second thing is storytelling. I'm a part of Seramount, who brings CDOs together from across different industries. And one of the best practices or things that CDOs are really focused on is reteaching what DEI is through storytelling, right? So not just saying the words, but showing the people and how they benefit from the work, or showing how DEI is a input to customer success and retention, right? An example of that is Highspot is we use our ERGs to test our product accessibility features in our platform. And guess what? We're selling to big enterprise-wide customers like the HSBC, who's focusing on disability accessible products for those with different abilities, right? So bringing the business integration and just showing how that also touches the end consumer as a part of that story is going to be key, right, to their survival and continuous momentum of DEI within the workplace.
How many folks do you have at HighSpot? How big is the company?
HighSpot is about over like 1,200 folks. We are a middle-sized tech startup. However, we've grown rapidly. So when I joined the organization, we were 600 employees, right? And then we expanded to various global regions. However, you know, where my training comes from is Fortune 500, so over 10,000 plus, right, employees. So obviously your strategies and the time that it takes to integrate some of those focus areas will look different, right, across industry and the strength and the capacity of each of the DEI teams.
So I'd like to shift a little more into your story because I've heard so many fascinating things here. So I hear a couple of transitions. Like, what was it like to go from operations into culture and people for you in your career?
Yeah, it was a interesting natural pivot, shall I say. At that time, I was a part of what we call like our global offshoring team, where we lift a certain business operations from the US and we implement it in different global centers. So think about a call center, right? Outsourcing it to a different country. And in helping really create the design of like, okay, how do you actually migrate a business process, right, from one place to the next? A piece that really caught my attention was how do we actually hire in those regions? And once you hire, how do you create culture? And understanding that culture in, you know, the UK may be different than culture, right, in North America. How do you create reward systems that are equitable? How, what do those benefits look like, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So I naturally got a glimpse on like how do you actually think about culture and infusing two cultures to create a new culture, right? Essentially. So that really piqued my interest. And Laura, I'll tell you, those global teams drove so much innovation at that company. They actually were the ones that come up with the idea around pet insurance. Yes, you heard it from me here. but it was because of the experience, right, of the employees in different regions, et cetera, et cetera. So it was that point that I encouraged my mentor at that time to help me lean into more of the people and culture work because I wanted to create a work environment where everyone felt accepted and valued. And I saw the ROI and the innovation that came from sitting in that operational engineering seat. So that's how I made my way to people and culture.
So, for an operations standpoint, you saw more innovation come out of diverse teams. Is that fair to say?
It is absolutely what I'm saying.
Yeah. And what was it like going from big Fortune 500 companies to a startup?
Oh, that's a really great question. Well, you know, I'll tell you this. So the momentum is very different, right? So Fortune 500, just because they're large, complex organizations, matrix everywhere, different stakeholders across different regions, it just takes longer to align on strategy and then also activate and drive the strategies. Now, you get there for sure, but with DEI and with just people, our needs change really, really fast, right? So the question becomes, you know, can you actually drive change management at the rate that you can, you know, at a startup to be very flexible to just-in-time needs of the people, right? But on the other hand, you typically have bigger budgets, you have bigger SME teams, like a comms person and a, you know, your data team, and right? So you have more resources to drive with a level of precision that maybe you wouldn't, you know, at a startup. So I very much loved working at a Fortune 500, and that's really where I learned a lot of my core business acumen skills that I think have served me well. But if you move into a startup world such as tech, it's a different consumer base or employee base. They're my consumers, but employee base. So you have, you know, organizations that are filled with populations that are greater, leaning towards Gen Z and millennials, right? So the way of thinking, challenging, just more of the modernization of just how people work, where they work from, the type of benefits and how managers support them looks very different. But because culture and working for a value-driven company seems to be a part of their willingness to accept a role, there's a lot of buy-in and a lot of enthusiasm for culture and DEI. Plus, it's more startup. So you can have an idea and you can drive it, right? You can test it really fast, you can fail fast, try it over, right? But you may not have a lot of resources, right, to drive that work at the rate that you can, Fortune 500. So pros and cons for
Yeah,
sure.
less resources, less red tape too.
Yeah, right.
If you have an idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. Before we go, I'm really curious about, we'll have to have another conversation just about this, but I'm curious what your experience has been and your thoughts around AI in the workplace, because I'm fascinated with that.
Yeah, so I am really excited about AI. I have recently become a board advisor to an AI company that has amazing people analytics platform with AI embedded in DEI insights. And what I can say is, at least, from my lane, I believe that AI can speed up how we scale culture and how we actually pivot and react to the things that we're driving for our employees. An example of that is because my team is rather small, we can now use AI and layer it over all of our people systems to see where we predict we may have retention challenges or what leaders need what type of support from the DEI team. We have clarity into the recruiting funnels and if diverse candidates are experiencing the same path through race than others. It gives us an idea as to like the benefits utilization and if we're investing in the right place in real time. And this is the first time that we've been able to get our arms around the end-to-end employee life cycle, but also get those insights that tell us what may be next so that we can be proactive about our approach, right? So I'm excited about it, if we use it for good. But I'm also scared a little bit. Like, let me just be honest. I think privacy and data and governance is going to be huge, right? And, for me, it's really about who has access to my data, what are they doing with the data, how is it generating outcomes that include me? And then naturally, I always ask, is there bias? Which there can be in some of those algorithms. So I don't know. That's kind of my perspective. What about you? How do you feel about it?
I am more excited than I am scared, which I think is a good place to be for all things, right? I have prayer for AI. My prayer, because I'm 65, I'm going to be 65 in January. I've seen a lot of technology in my lifetime, and I feel like the hope for technology was, for me, more time off with family and friends. Which has not come to pass with technology because we're less connected. So my prayer for AI is it actually does save people time and it brings more groups of people prosperity because I think it can do both. If,
It for sure.
you know, and I, you know, in my company and in my life, I'm determined to use AI for good. And to save time, my team's time so they can be with their family, and my time so I can be with my family. And I'm fascinated with it. My first sort of foray into it was Grammarly. And as a writer, I used to pay editors. And now I have an editor that's with me all the time. And I love my editor, and it saves me time. Yeah, so I'm really excited about it, and I think time will tell, but it's here and it's coming. It's sort of like, 30 years ago, I thought I'll never use an ATM machine. I'm always going to go to my banker and have, of course we all use ATM machines, and I think it's here, it's growing, it's going to be part of our lives, and I think we have to be very aware, awake. And, use it for good.
Yeah, and responsible. Yeah, it's interesting because I'm also excited to see how AI can help revolutionize the healthcare industry. So I've led DEI in healthcare spaces as well, where we focus on, health equity outcomes. And there are new models that can use data to predict those who may be predisposed to certain type of cancers, right? So like looking at some of those things, I'm really excited, but to your point, I am cautious.
No, I think, the reason we got a COVID vaccine so fast is because of collaboration and AI, and I think it's going to have better health outcomes. And again, my prayer is that it's used equitably across economic boundaries, across countries, across, I'd like it to help all of us and not just some of us, right? So,
So I have a question for you. Are
yeah.
you in purchasing an AI-driven robot that can walk around your home and do dishes?
I haven't looked into that yet. I did buy a walking standing desk today, but that's not AI. That's just getting me to walk more. But I like that idea. I don't have a dishwasher. I actually wash my dishes by hand, but sometimes I get my best ideas from that. I think it's going to be exciting to see what happens. And I think it's always looking at these things with hope and joy and opportunity and not with too much fear, but cautiousness, right? So, Jill, before we end, and thank you so much for being with me today, I'd love for you to share with listeners one life lesson and one leadership lesson.
One life lesson I would say came from my mother, and she taught me that anything is possible, right? If you have a vision, if you're determined to do whatever it is, it can happen. However, there may be people and times and things that tell you no. And understand that those no's are simply people or environments or things that just simply don't know how to get it done, right? So to be open to continuing to achieve your goals, your dreams, even over those no's, is what this lifetime is all about. And that's something that I've lived by. I've had so many no's, and I said, okay, that means you're not the right person. But thank you, right? So that's my life lesson that I live by and I teach to my children. And one leadership lesson, which I often share and coach with the leaders that I work with, is understand that we don't know it all. We don't know it all as leaders. And the more that we can lean in and be honest about who we are, both from a human side and just, our business acumen, the more we create vulnerabilities in our teams and they actually lean in harder to help drive business outcomes versus the other way around, right? If we're more rigid, we think we have the answers, et cetera, et cetera. And Laura, we both know that, but I think right now is the time just in this world to restate it. And how that can actually take us so much further in this ever-changing landscape of the world and people and, business.
Yeah, I love that. I think it brings us to the beginning of our conversation. We don't know about what the world is gonna, what's gonna happen with our world, our government, all sorts of things. So being in the I don't know everything place is really, really powerful. Jill, how can people learn more about Highspot and you?
Absolutely. Well, feel free to add me on LinkedIn. I am Jill Feliciano, Jill as in JYL, so very unique spelling there. And then they can also visit us on Highspot's LinkedIn page or highspot.com to check us out and learn more about our sales enablement platforms.
Well, thank you so much for being with me. I hope you and your family have a beautiful Thanksgiving.
You too. This conversation was the highlight of my week. So thank you
Awesome.
to you and your organization for everything that you continue to do.
Thank you so much. You're so kind. And that's a heart-wrapped episode of the Compassionate Leader Circle podcast. May your compass always point to kindness.
As you navigate the world, let compassion be your North Star. Join us next time as we continue to redefine success one heart-led decision at a time.
Lead wisely, lead with heart. You can learn more about us at CompassionateLeadersCircle.com.